Hello, everyone, and welcome to the No Normal Show for Thursday, September 3rd, brought to you by Revive Health. This is our weekly deep dive into how hospitals and health system marketers can navigate this world where we call the No Normal. I'm Josh Schoonover, and I'll be today's guest host. And I'm joined, as always, by Chase Kleckner, Senior Marketing Manager at Revive Health and the show's Iron Man of a producer. Hey, Chase.
Hey, Josh. Good to see you, as always, and good to have you on the show.
Likewise. Thank you. We are also joined by Stephanie Weirwill. She leads our content practice here at Revive and works with hospitals and health systems across the country to determine the stories to tell and where to tell them, from social to digital channels to more traditional ones. Stephanie, great to have you here.
Hello, thanks for having me.
And also we have Sasha Boghossian with us today. He is the head of our insights practice at Revive. He's a veteran strategist who has helped healthcare organizations define their brand, connect with their customers, and build the future they want. As a head of the group, he is responsible for our agency's overall approach to diagnosing our clients' problems through research and data analysis, and then charting the course to deliver the right solution. Sasha, good to have you with us.
Great to be on with you, Josh.
All right. So before we dive into the meat of the show, just a couple housekeeping items. On this podcast, we will be sharing industry trends, research stories within and beyond the healthcare industry, and some ideas and content to help health systems navigate the no normal successfully. If you want to understand a little bit more about what we mean by no normal, some of the key principles, check out our blog post, which Chase is putting in the chat function right now. Second, for our live listeners, please use the question queue in Zoom if you have any questions along the way, and we'll get to as many of them as possible. You can also use the chat function to converse with one another, but if you'd like us to answer a question, please put that in the question queue. We'll provide any relevant links in the chat along the way through this discussion, so you can access those immediately. And then the third item is, remember, you can subscribe to the podcast on iTunes or wherever you listen to podcasts. We will be posting a recording of this episode by the end of the day today. And you can visit our website at thinkrevivehealth.com/COVID-19 for that. All right, so let's dive in. We've talked a lot about the no normal for a couple of months now. And just something I want to draw our attention to today that sets the stage for our discussion is, if we look at this period, it is just rife with conditions where truth, transparency, and combating misinformation are all exceptionally challenging, which one creates opportunities for doubt, confusion, uncertainty. Whether that is, you know, inconsistent approaches to responding to COVID-19, we look at like locality by locality, and you can just see this patchwork. And so what you may hear in one place versus another starts to become a little bit different. So that contributes to it. There's all kinds of disagreement about testing. There is, you know, the efficacy of it, what types of tests you ought to get, turnaround times. Different interpretations of just case and some of the death data, which we're going to talk about momentarily. Bringing on new therapeutics and claims about those, the rush to vaccines and the number of those that are in some phase of clinical trial with, you know, ramped up dates to try to get those ready. They all present like cracks in accuracy and cracks in truth and cracks in confidence in folks. So as a result, we just have a whole populace of people that has to work really hard just to think about what they can trust or know where the truth lies, as though there's not already enough on their plates in this crazy and unusual time. Just one of the examples that we talked about earlier this week, there was a lot of chatter about new guidance from the CDC that some people interpreted as reimagining what the actual death count is from COVID. The claims by some were they had revised the death count to actually 6% of the total death count. So instead of 180,000, there was 9,000 deaths attributed to COVID. And so that created all kinds of chatter of people, one who were in disbelief of those numbers in general, saying, look, COVID-19 has actually only claimed 9,000 lives. It's not this bigger story that people are making it out to be. And then you have others that saying, no, what that information, what that data said is there were 6% of the population that had no known underlying conditions at all and died of COVID, but that others, they may have had other conditions, but that doesn't necessarily mean that COVID wasn't the cause of their death. So you just, Sasha, I know you're going to talk about tribalism, but you're in your camp, right? And so there are certain people that are pretty certain about what they think and how they interpret things. But then you have a whole bunch of people that just want to know the truth and want to know answers. So that's what we're going to dive in today. The good news is, or the silver lining is that when people are looking for trusted information, they're turning to all of the people on this call, right? And the organizations they represent and the providers they represent. And while trust in government institutions and other usually nonpartisan institutions has gone down due to a lot of the disagreement that there is, trust in hospitals and providers has only gone up. We know that through some public opinion research that 76% of people have a favorable view of health systems, and that 9 out of 10 look to their physicians and nurses and caregivers, and particularly local ones, as the best source of truth for information about COVID-19, public health, any vaccines that may be coming out. So that puts, you know, all of the healthcare providers, hospitals, and health systems in a really good spot in terms of being a source of truth, but it also comes with a really significant amount of responsibility in that. And so we're going to spend the bulk of our time today talking about that area or that domain of the health or hospital and health system's role in being truth tellers and providers of transparent information to folks during the no normal. So to start, Sasha, I'm going to throw this question to you. You've done a lot of research along the way throughout these past several months, looking at consumer confidence and perceptions. And we've talked a bit about that on some of the during some of the early months of COVID. But I'm curious if you could just place that a bit in context of where we sit now. And then as we think about what's coming down the road with therapeutics and vaccines, how we ought to be thinking about that, particularly from the hospital and health system perspective.
That's right. I think it's a great place to start the conversation. What we know, which was true in March and April and June, and continues to be true, is that the public has gained a lot of trust in its healthcare brands during this pandemic. You mentioned some really startling stats, and it's worth revisiting. 76% essentially approval rating for hospitals among the public in a poll that we just reviewed with a revered pollster, and that's national. That number is way higher than it's ever been. 92% of consumers believe that hospitals have responded very positively and trust the way that hospitals have responded to COVID. And 2/3 of them say that they have a better or improved view of hospitals as a result. So what we know is that in the ecosystem, we're seen as truth tellers, we're seen as credible sources of information, but I haven't necessarily seen a lot of healthcare organizations do something about that that goes beyond sort of their day-to-day remit of talking to patients about care. The issues that we're talking about today, the issues that you started the program off with, are really societal issues, right? How should you be thinking about vaccines? How should you be thinking about the death toll from COVID? How should you be thinking about the impact of COVID in general? I think that there is an enormous opportunity for healthcare organizations to step into that space. But it goes back to something to a word you mentioned that I think is really critical in all of this, which is responsibility. Do we think that we have a responsibility to be part of that discussion? Or do we want to focus most of our attention to promoting our service lines, reassuring people that it's safe to come and get care from us, and so on? And I think that that's really the core of the debate. You can look at other industries like in sort of the shoe industry. Nike doesn't spend its time telling you how great its shoes are. Chipotle doesn't tell you how great its restaurants are. They engage in conversations about the ethics of the origin of their ingredients. They talk about what an athlete requires. They engage in bigger conversations. And I think that in some ways it's important for us to consider whether we have a responsibility to do that, because from the opportunity side, I can tell you all the data is telling us that we would be very credible sources to engage in this conversation. It just takes some bravery knowing the tribal nature of the world that we live in today.
So you talked about public opinion being very high on how hospitals and health systems and providers have responded, and largely in a clinical context. They see what they've been doing to treat folks, to deliver the best possible care. But then you also brought up like the voice. What are they communicating? How are they communicating? And so, Stephanie, I'd love to, if you could share a little bit about what we have seen or what you have seen health systems doing in terms of how they have or haven't taken on this responsibility of being arbiters of truth and information, and whether you see systems running towards that or a bit shying away from it, and kind of a little bit of what your observations are around that.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, we actually have seen a couple examples of hospitals and health systems taking this on in very small one-off cases. So a couple of those examples, there was a moment when there was a false memo kind of spread that looked like it was from St. Louis Hospital in Kansas City. And this rumor that they caught pretty quickly and addressed. What I like about that is they addressed every single incoming message they got about it. So handled it in a one-on-one basis through social channels and other channels where the messages came from. They put out information about it being false and really addressed that specifically. And I think one reason why is it was about them, right? So it was specific to that health system. Another example that we've seen is Johns Hopkins has a myths versus facts page and a page that is intended to dispel COVID-19 rumors, pretty easily found on their site and updated on an ongoing basis. So I think those are some examples of some ways that we've seen health systems do this. What we haven't seen is, I think what we're talking about today is the more systemic, widespread issue of health misinformation. That to your point has a lot of complexities to it. It has a lot of societal issues. It gets very political very quickly. And that's something that we have not seen health systems go in on from a more scalable standpoint. And I think a couple of reasons for that, right? Some of which might be obvious. The first is it's really hard. So, you know, social platforms like Facebook and Twitter, this in a way is in their realm to deal with, but it's been difficult for them. And they've run up against political issues like free speech and just the issue of the fact that this is so scaled and that there, when you have, you know, thousands, millions of people potentially talking about something, how do you combat that? And the second reason is that health systems are often focused on service line marketing and driving volume. And like Sasha was mentioning earlier, unlike other industries, this industry hasn't necessarily looked at taking a stand for larger political or social or cultural issues. And so I think what we're starting to see and understand is that unlike pre-COVID times, and there was some of this then too, but now more than ever, misinformation directly affects if and how people seek care. So it seems like now, as this is a growing issue and really increasing in bigger numbers than before, health misinformation itself is a public health crisis and one that could effectively affect health systems' business. And so it seems like now is the time to really take charge of that and at least start talking about how do we as an industry address this on a scalable standpoint.
So I want to follow up on that a minute and Sasha, get your input on this, which is, you know, you talked about in your question the responsibility issue and the role and what kind of conversations there ought to be and to what degree you feel confident planting a flag in that. Stephanie, you talked about misinformation and the kind of in light of like a public health crisis and what that is. So Sasha, I just wonder if you could talk a little bit about like a bit more about that responsibility. Like what does this isn't a unique moment, right? We've never encountered this kind of moment. Sure, we've had things like swine flu and the avian flu before, Ebola before, but they've never been this big, this sustained. So they were like these temporary times where people had to provide information. This is life-changing kind of situation. So I just wonder if you can talk a little bit deeper about some of that responsibility.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's it's a great question. And the sense of responsibility, I think, is going to be interpreted differently from organization to organization. But in a conversation that Stephanie and I were having yesterday, I thought she really articulated it brilliantly, that we all adhere as sort of clinical providers to the Hippocratic Oath, which says, first, do no harm. It's a matter of how we interpret that in today's society. And I thought she made a great point when we were discussing this, that if we know that this misinformation that's floating out there will ultimately perhaps impact people's willingness to get vaccinated or to seek care in their hospitals when they see certain symptoms for COVID, or otherwise behave in ways that we think are harmful to their health and to our market's health, are we doing harm to them and to our market by not taking action? So if we don't take a strong position, and if we don't share our authoritative voice around how people should be thinking about vaccination, have we done harm? And I think different organizations will interpret that differently, but I thought it was just such a crystallized way to think about our responsibility generally, particularly interpreted through the oaths we take and the missions that we hold ourselves to. And when I look at it from that perspective, the answer is sort of obvious to me. We have a responsibility. It applies to us. We care for the health of all of the people that are in our markets. And by not taking action, it seems to me that we may be letting things sort of deteriorate the overall health of our community because of inaction that they will cause.
Stephanie, anything to add to that?
Yeah, I just have noticed recently, more so than ever, how many health systems' mission statements include things like improving and increasing the health of the community. And it's interesting to think about all the different meanings of that, right? Like the lowest hanging fruit is, of course, about healthcare accessibility, but there's many things layered on top of it now, especially around inequities and health disparities. And then things like this, like how are we making sure that the community has the most accurate, up-to-date, real-time information? And we know, as mentioned earlier, that trust in health systems is high, and in some cases higher than government organizations or the news or the media. So that sort of makes it our responsibility to ensure that, because we have this trust, that people are getting the right information and that the community has that source of truth in order to be the healthiest it possibly can be.
So I want to dig into that in a moment, but I'm going to ask a kind of like a zoom out, more macro question to you, Sasha, which is, I think we can intellectually get there on all these things, right? We can rationalize why this is an important thing in a time, but organizations are complex. They have a lot to deal with. They have a lot to consider in terms of like where they are, the role they play, the dynamics of their communities, the dynamics of the systems to which they belong. But I just wonder if you could talk a little bit about like what stands in the way of kind of like leaning into something like this based on all of your experiences with health systems and what they are and aren't or able or willing to communicate beyond some of the clinical or community programs that they often share information about.
It's interesting. You know, we work with organizations throughout the country, and in every case, our counterparts there are brave. They want to do the most they can for their communities, oftentimes in ways that are way outside of sort of the traditional clinical ways that patients interact with these health systems. But that sort of individual bravery sometimes doesn't translate into institutional bravery, just because we're all familiar, and I think the listeners will be familiar too, that our industry, that the healthcare delivery industry, seems to be sort of a committee-driven exercise where we need consensus, we need lots of input, and frankly, we operate within pretty traditional parameters in terms of the messages that we get behind and the initiatives that we commit to and the ways that we show up in our markets. And the most innovative organizations in our industry are really just sort of at the margins of big social issues, big societal issues and public health issues. They're not square in the middle of it. And it's not as big a focus as I think they have an opportunity to make it. And I don't think we do that intentionally. I just think that organizations that are in such a complex industry of trying to deliver care at the highest quality, at the most efficiency, trying to serve so many different populations, and all of the complexities and issues that go along with just keeping that system going and improving it over time, you become sort of by nature a little bit safe and maybe averse to risk. And this is risky. It's not like we can look at our industry and see 50 different health systems that are all in on really big societal issues or really the national COVID misinformation narrative. So we can't seek safety among our colleagues, and nobody wants to be first. Nobody wants to be way out ahead of the rest of the industry. So I think that's probably part of what holds us back.
So a question on that, which is, you know, we've seen trust in government or institutions declining, right? And we've seen a lot of information out there, and we've seen this arrow of trust being pointed to health systems. So it kind of like begs the question of like, who else could do this? So we have actually a question from one of our attendees. So I'm going to throw it out there and one of you take this. It reads as this: we as hospital marketers are no exception when it comes to being negatively affected by the proliferation of misinformation. How do we decide what is true and what's not true? Isn't it possible that people trust us a lot right now because we're focusing on what we're good at, which is providing care?
Yeah, I think that's a reasonable sort of assumption, that because we've shown up and sort of run into the fire as everybody else is fleeing from it, that's part of what has sort of bolstered people's trust and belief in us. I would expect that if we take more visible sort of public stance on these issues, that we would come up against opposition and that we would be questioned. I don't think that's in doubt. I think the real question is, do we have a responsibility to do that on the sort of societal side? And on the sort of opportunistic side, does that provide us an opportunity to differentiate our own health system, to play a bigger role in the lives of the people in our market and the people that we treat? So I think about it that way. I know that by taking a stand on these issues, you're going to get people coming out of the woodwork. You're going to run up into more opposition than you have with your traditional messages. But it's a matter of sort of what's at stake and what we think our responsibility is within that context.
Yeah, the one thing I would add is completely hear and feel as well that, you know, how does one or an organization or a group of folks decide what is true and what is not true in this world when there are so many things flying and changing every hour. That said, I think there's some low-hanging fruit in that a lot of the factual information that is shared is often not shared in a way that's easily understandable by consumers. So that 6% stat earlier that Josh mentioned that was shared, you know, from the CDC, like that's a great example where a lot of the reason why it has caused so much virality of, you know, misinformation sharing is because it is a little difficult to interpret. And it does require going to the, you know, site and looking into it and reading the data and interpreting it. And so I think one way is, you know, health systems have access to physicians and scientists and researchers who understand these things at a much more, of course, complex level than average Americans. And so just taking the things that we do know to be true, whatever they, you know, may be, or from whatever sources or partners that health systems have, and interpreting them in plain English for the community. And it doesn't necessarily mean, you know, new research or net new, you know, ideation, but just interpreting, that I think can go a long way.
That's a good lead into to this question for you, Stephanie, which is, I know you have been like acutely attuned to misinformation and its spread, particularly across social and digital channels. So just building a little bit on what you just said, tell us a little bit about what health systems could do or should be thinking about when it comes to combating information, whether it's the translation into more simpler terms, whether it's pointing to other resources. Just curious about your thoughts on that.
Yeah, I think first, you know, to that, it's important to start with kind of where we are from a cultural standpoint. There's sort of this thought that if folks see things online, you know, that they should form their opinions, they should take the advice that makes sense to them, that aligns with their own views. In many cases, you know, doing their own research, which there's some really good things about that, but also it leads to folks, again, interpreting data how they know how to or how they want to interpret it. And health guidance is one of the things that I think this approach should not be taken on, right? Like, one of the challenges is that there is no single source of truth and that there are so many different opinions flying. And so we've seen all kinds of, you know, false guidance around the novel coronavirus, around, you know, viral videos that even some physicians have spread. There's just so many examples of this. So to me, one of the first steps that health systems can take in their local communities is monitoring, like, what's being spread in the communities. And maybe not thinking about this as how to solve this huge complex national problem, but just what is spreading in the local area or, you know, that may simply be rumors, and then working to address that on, you know, on their sites, on their social channels, even in partnership with the news media, and kind of addressing this on an ongoing basis. And I think, you know, PR is a really great, tentacle here of including ongoing fact checking, maybe even in partnership with local news, of saying, hey, let's band together and we would like to help, you know, you as the news or whatever voices are strong in the community fact check things and be a source for that. And then to essentially interpret any new data that comes out. So to me, those are some first steps that can affect the community and also can help make that hospital or health system become the voice of truth in the community.
And if I could just add an example that I've seen pop up through our work at Revive, which has been an incredible opportunity, but I see it sort of as a failure on our part to convince a client to step into that. Over the course of the last 4 months, in working with our paid media partners, we have been given opportunities by broadcast television to place PSAs. So this is television reaching out and saying, we have free space for your healthcare organization clients to come say something authoritative about how people ought to be behaving and taking care of their health during this pandemic. That seems like a pretty good deal. Getting on TV for free to give out some medical advice. We haven't been able to do it. And we've had success in small opportunities, but nothing national, nothing widespread. I will say that we've had a great deal of success working with hospital associations in preparing these sorts of messages to give to their membership to broadcast at a local level, particularly around the wearing of masks and reminding people of the safety of hospitals. But it's just sort of interesting to me that we've had these opportunities come our way, which clearly indicate there's space for us to walk into if we're bold enough with a message. And the second part of that, and I think it relates to the question that you asked, Stephanie, what can we be doing to sort of anticipate what's around the corner? We don't know when, but we know that at some point there are going to be vaccines for people. relatively widely available. We all do this annually with health system clients, is prepare for and then execute communications around flu vaccinations during flu season. So it's not like we're totally unfamiliar with the issue, but if right now we know that, say, 4 months from now, or 6 months from now, or 9 months from now, there are going to be vaccines widely available, what are we doing to sort of prepare our market for that message so that they've heard from us, they've been reassured from us, or at least that our authoritative voice, taking advantage of the credibility we know we have, is in the mix, helping people feel safe about this so that when it is widely available, that there are more people that get the vaccine than they otherwise might.
So two things. We've talked quite a bit about responsibility and the role of hospitals and health systems to be the communicators of this. And I think anyone on this call hearing that could maybe take that as like, I know what my responsibilities are. I have a ton of them. Like, it's easy for you to say that on a podcast. And I want to make it really clear that it's not a matter of like us trying to point out a responsibility. It's as much about the opportunity of it, right? And that there is a whole population of people that look to us, whether we have intended to reach out to them or not. And so we have this opportunity to be able to provide the best information that we have, whether it's, you know, broadly about COVID or, like you said, coming up, you know, new medications that are proven to be effective and how are people knowing that? Maybe new tests, more rapid tests, so that we're not waiting 7 days for some of them. Where are those available? How do they, and why are they more advantageous, and why do they lead to a greater community benefit? The vaccine thing that you talked about, which is, all right, now that we have them, where are they? How many do we have? Where can one get them? So I don't want this to be all about a heaviness of responsibility, but there are a lot of opportunities right now and a lot of eyeballs directed towards hospitals and health systems to have these conversations and provide the best possible information to folks. I mean, and we've kind of joked about this, this is the moment, right? This is the playoffs. We've been practicing a lot about how do we communicate important messages to folks, and is there a more important moment than this, I wonder? So, any kind of concluding thoughts, Sasha? Stephanie, any kind of takeaways? If there's one thing people could take away from this discussion, what would that be?
Yeah, I just want to add a little bit more to what can be done and what some of those opportunities are. I think we have a lot of times that hospitals and health systems come to us and ask, you know, hey, we want to start a movement, or, you know, we want to do something really big in our communities. We want to make a splash. And to me, this is an awesome opportunity to take that and to it become that single source of truth. And I think that's an incredible movement and one that is very much needed. And so if I think about a few specific things that can be done under that, you know, it, just simply sharing facts is sort of step one. But I think partnering with physicians and have them share facts as well. You know, we had run some numbers around the reach that hospitals and health systems can have in the US, and actually found that of the 6,000 plus health systems in the US, if you add up just their organic reach alone through social, that's almost 10% of the population, which if you buy into the research and theories that have been done around how if you reach 10% of the population and affect their beliefs, you can actually affect the larger whole. So I think that is powerful, powerful stuff. And just again, thinking about the platform that hospitals and health systems have nationally, and then going back to the community, you know, how to use those channels to just simply share some facts on an ongoing basis, or to give physicians a platform to share those facts, or again, you know, to partner with news outlets to do that. So I feel like that is a wonderful opportunity that certainly gets me impassioned and riled up, and something to at least consider looking into.
Yeah, I think those are all really great places to start. I mean, for me, just at a 30,000 foot view, I'd like to hear us talk more about what's happening and lend authority to our view of it. and talk less about ourselves. I think that I would apply that advice to every industry out there. We're at a time when there is just a lot swirling around, and people are dealing with a lot. But as Josh said, this moment in time seems like it's the one that we've been preparing for. There are more microphones in front of our little podium than there have ever been before. And it seems to me that we shouldn't let the opportunity go to waste, either because we look at it as a responsibility or because we look at it as an opportunity. Either way leads me to the same conclusion that we ought to be saying a lot more about what's happening out there and not what's happening with us.
Well, thank you both. That will wrap up today's show. We appreciate Stephanie and Sasha for joining and providing their insights. And as always, thanks to Chase, where he's nearing 100 of these podcasts, and he's only missed 3. So I just want to make sure we call that out. In the meantime, please let us know if there's anything or something you'd like us to cover in an upcoming podcast, either through the Zoom chat real quickly or by shooting us an email at nonormal@thinkrevivehealth.com. Next week, we'll be joined by Beth Toner, who is the Senior Communications Officer at the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation. She has more than 25 years of experience in marketing and corporate communications and previously worked at the Children's Hospital of Philadelphia and UPenn Health. She's also a registered nurse with experience in long-term and community health and will guide us on how to better engage with our nursing staff during the pandemic. Remember to visit thinkrevivehealth.com/COVID-19 for a recording of today's episode and all of our content related to the crisis and to subscribe on iTunes. And until next week, good luck out there in the no normal. Thank you all.